Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes one episode at a time, the greatest TV series of all time, CBS's MASH, which ran from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us this week in the VIP tent is Nicholas Prom. Hi, Nicholas.
Hi, Rob. How you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to have you here at the 477th. Before we get started on the episode in question, I always ask a new guest, like, what's your connection with the show? Did you watch it as a kid? Like, how did you become a fan?
Yeah, I watched it in reruns as a kid, and it made a strong impression on me that's lasted my whole life. I hadn't seen MASH. About 5 years ago, I saw like a marathon of some MASH episodes on tape, and it was the first time I'd seen MASH in like 20 years. Mm-hmm. But I remembered, it was one of those situations where memories started flooding back to me. Like, I remembered how important this show was, and like, even as a kid, I didn't really understand a lot of the things going on MASH.
Sure.
But I got like that this was a show that was really about something, about the human condition, about trying to find the moral high ground, even in a horrible situation like a war. Yeah, MASH is fantastic.
for a show that is set in the past and has a lot of references to things that were out of date at the time, and it features a setting that wouldn't necessarily appeal to kids, I find that almost everyone that I've talked to who has either been on the show to this point or will be on the show said that they watched the show as a kid. And it's interesting to me how much appeal MASH seemed to have to small children, even though you would not think it would be that kind of show.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Hawkeye and Trapper and Radar and Klinger, like, these are characters that have a lot of – they're almost – cartoony in in a way that would appeal to children. I think it's a great show to like wean kids off cartoons and into maybe something with more substance. MASH is just something special. It's a show that has an appeal to anybody with a heart.
Oh, very good. I like that. Yeah. Yeah, I think it has a real high energy to it, and I think that appeals to kids. It certainly appealed to me when I was a kid, even though, as I've said in previous episodes, I didn't get half the references. You know, they're talking about there's references in this episode where they talk about stuff, and I'm like, what is that? I have no idea, but it appealed to me anyway. So that's a good thing, as it is. You know, I think MASH imparts a lot of good lessons for kids, and we'll get to that in this very episode, actually. So.
Oh yeah, as you mentioned the references, you know, I remember. Like, a lot of – enjoying the show, but a lot of the stuff going way over my head when I was a kid. Particularly the lecherousness of Hawkeye and Trapper. But, like, as an adult going back and watching these, I'm like, oh, they're – I get a lot of these, like, old-timey pop culture references, and that's – they're a real treat. Mm-hmm. It's like reading comic books. Like, if you know the continuity, there's so many treats as a reader for you the more you dig in. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Absolutely. There's lots of stuff that I said it just blew by me as a kid. And then later on, I learned what it was. Like, oh, okay, that's what they're talking about, this old radio show, or they're talking about this old author, or they're talking about some song. Yeah, I love all that kind of stuff. And it definitely helped me sort of get an interest in older Americana and stuff like that. So, yeah absolutely.
And I think the fact they put all those references in, it gives it a layer of authenticity. You know, it's like it feels like the kinds of things you BS with a friend about and then might, you know, remember, you know, think back on, you know, as you get older. But watching MASH, it's like it makes all these things come back.
Mm-hmm. And of course, as we all know, and we'll get to later episodes, Radar loved to read comic books. And as we saw, comic books that did not exist at the time. Those are also a whole separate treat of finding the anachronistic references in MASH. But we'll get to that in later episodes. The one that Nicholas and I are here to talk about is Season 1, Episode 5, The Moose. An original air date was October 15th, 1972, written by Lawrence Marks and directed by Hy Averback. Hawkeye and Trapper are incensed when they see that a visiting sergeant is accompanied by a moose, a local term for basically a slave. This Sergeant Baker bought the young girl named Young Hee from her family to work as his helper. Baker underlines his lack of humanity when he refers to Young Hee as a gook, a word Hawkeye demands never be uttered in front of him again. Hawkeye and Trapper do some investigating, and via Radar and Ho-John, they find out how young he ended up as Baker's moose. They suggest reporting him to his commanding officer, but Henry points out that won't do much good. Baker's CO has a moose of his own. They decide to set a trap for Baker by having him play in a poker game where Radar is letting Hawkeye know what cards Baker is holding. Baker ends up hugely in debt to Hawkeye, who offers to call off the debt if he frees young he. Baker reluctantly agrees and leaves camp. They then send Ho-John to find her family. In the meantime, they work on teaching young he to be a confident, poised young woman who does not need to be constantly deferential to others. They teach her English beyond the few cliches she's learned, how to be more confident, even getting her to help out in post-op. She also acts as a personal assistant to Hawkeye. Old habits die hard. Young He's little brother, a little smooth-talking punk named Benny, arrives to take Young He back and says they'll be able to get even more money for her now that she's been educated. Hawkeye and Trapper, after threatening to get on their knees and punch the little shrimp in the nose, tries to convince Young He that she doesn't have to do what her family demands, but she leaves with Benny anyway. After a few minutes, though, she returns to the swamp, telling Hawkeye and Trapper she's decided to tell Benny to shove off. Later, we learn that Young He has moved on to a Buddhist monastery in a letter she wrote to Hawkeye and Trapper, thanking them for their help. Hawkeye, Trapper, and Spearchucker are happy they've been able to show Young He a better life, and Hawkeye muses he misses the good shaves Young He used to give. Trapper and Spearchucker respond by roughhousing Hawkeye and shoving him into the swamp. So, Nicholas, what do you think of this episode?
I like this episode. It has some strong points and some weaknesses, but overall I enjoyed this. It doesn't take much moral fortitude to have a hardline stance against slavery. But I think it's an important lesson to drive home and repeat. It's not something that we should take for granted. I think, you know, Hawkeye's shock that this kind of thing is going on kind of plays into that, that mm-hmm. we mm-hmm. can't imagine that this kind of thing would still go on. But yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, I like that when they talk about it to Ho-John, Ho-John knows the score. You know, Ho-John has lived in Korea his whole life, and he's sort of like, yeah, this is just what goes on. And he's sort of like, you know, kind of having to school Hawkeye and Trapper a little bit as to that this is really a thing. And I will say, I mentioned a couple minutes ago, like seeing this stuff as a kid is important. This is the first episode of the first five where Hawkeye really has a serious moment, a real serious moment. And that's the moment where Baker uses that word to refer to Young He. And yeah. Hawkeye says, you know, I don't like that word. And Baker's like, what, gook? And he goes, you know, yes. And he's like, nothing personal, sir. And he goes, then knock it off. And I love that Hawkeye so rarely pulled rank on anybody, but he was willing yeah. to in that moment. And that was an important scene for me as a kid because I never heard that word before. And I knew because I wanted to be like Hawkeye and I looked up to Hawkeye that if Hawkeye was telling me that word was a bad word, then it was a bad word. And that stuck with me my whole life. And I knew that was not a proper way of referring to anyone. But I love that Hawkeye has that moment. It really is. It's him getting up in Baker's face and using his authority to tell Baker to knock it off, which I think is just terrific.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And, you know, Baker's just a piece of crap. But,
yes, he is.
What I always find, like, I find, like, slurs against Asians are all, like, so strange, and I don't understand the reference. They come across as even more grotesque in a way, and I appreciate Hawkeye's, you know, like not putting up with it, because it just hammers home how reprehensible that kind of talk is.
Yeah, and I mean, and he's, you know, he what's his name, the Baker is like, well, you know, you really can't tell me what to do off base. And they even have an argument later on where he says, you know, like, you're one of these commissioned officers and you're not going to tell me what to do. But at the very least, Hawkeye is like, look, while you're on the 477th, you're going to do what I tell you and get and knock it off. And he's what you said, the character of Baker is a complete a-hole. He's played by an actor named Paul Jenkins, who was born in Philadelphia, strangely enough. He had a pretty decent career in the 70s and 80s. He appeared in Chinatown, Network. He did episodes of Trapper John, M.D., so there he is again with Trapper John. And he was in the film Sneakers. So he's had a couple. He hasn't been in anything in a little while, but he had a decent career of just being a jobbing actor, appearing here and there in little bit parts in different projects.
Yeah, he's one of those faces, like, he's familiar, but I couldn't quite place him.
Yep.
When you said Sneakers, I'm like, oh, okay. He's probably an old guy in that, but I remember loving that movie.
That's one of those movies that if most people have not seen it, but if they have, they love it. You know, it's like, that's a great movie. And then most people are like, what's that movie? I never saw that. But yeah, we'll have to do that on Film and Water sometime. That's a good
movie. I haven't seen that in like at least 20 years, but I remember liking it.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
This episode, like the other ones so far, has Hawkeye and Trapper pulling a scam, which in this case is the whole cheating on the cards by having Radar with binoculars in another tent looking at what Baker's cards are. But again, it's in the service of a good thing. You know, you're not bothered by the fact that they're cheating at cards because they're doing it to free Younghee. And of course, the whole idea of that whole trope of the good guys cheating in a game has been used in 1,000 sitcoms. The first example of it I can think outside of MASH, there was an episode of Cheers where Sam cheats at a game of chess when he's playing Robin Colcord, and he uses a radio transmitter to cheat. So that's a trope you've seen in a million sitcoms of the good guy using something to cheat the ostensible bad guy out of the game.
Now, did you think Hawkeye having the earpiece and just kind of being turned away from Baker, did you buy that? Or do you think, like, wouldn't you think the guy would get wise?
It's a little implausible that, you know, like, first of all, where'd they even get that equipment? For Pete's sake, they're in a medical unit. Where does he get a short circuit? But, you know, it's okay. And, yeah, I mean, Baker's not the sharpest knife in the drawer that he can't tell that Hawkeye's never turned more than 3/4 away from him. But, you know, again, it's fine. In these early episodes, Radar is so much less the naive little boy and more the kind of sleazy backroom dealer. Because, of course, during the sequence where he's reading Baker's cards, he ends up using his binoculars to follow a nerd.
Right. I kind of like, in these early episodes, this kind of the conniving, worldly version of Radar. Mm-hmm. I think later on they play up the, like, oh, he's kind of just like a little kid and naive and doesn't know anything, like, too much. I like the Radar that's sharp.
Right, he's more the Radar from the movie, who's kind of the wheeler dealer and knows all the nitty gritty. Although I have to say, they push it a little far when he follows the nurse with his binoculars, and like on the soundtrack, they even play kind of like a sax riff, like a jazz, like wah 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 wah, and he follows and the nurse starts taking her robe off before she's even into the tent. I'm like, what is going on at the 477? I don't think any nurse would really do that, but you know, it's okay. It works for the moment for a gag. The actress who plays Younghee is Virginia Ann Lee. She appeared in two subsequent episodes of MASH playing different characters. She was in a movie called Flower Drum Song. She was in the 1973 musical version of Lost Horizon, which I covered on Film and Water. And she was in a movie called Dimension 5. I have no idea what it is, but go to IMDb and look up the poster. It is one of the most amazing posters you've ever seen. It makes me want to see this. It's like some sort of spy movie. It makes me want to see it so bad. The poster is just fantastic. I love the actor who plays the little brother Benny. He's like a character out of Guys and Dolls, because he's like he calls her Dollface and all this stuff. I love that when we first see him, he's reading Hollywood Confidential. He's reading a magazine he should not be reading at this young age, and he smokes. There's this great bit where, and it actually is my favorite line in my favorite gag in the episode where Hawkeye and Trapper find Benny waiting for them at the swamp, and he's got the cigarette dangling out of his mouth, and Hawkeye grabs the cigarette and he goes, "I'll give this back to you when you're 50." I love that line. Yeah. Fantastic.
Oh, that's great. Oh, and here's a great reference. They make reference to the Dead End Kids.
That's right. That's right.
When they if I saw this one as a kid, I wouldn't have got that. But of course, as I got older, and you see Bela Lugosi meets the Dead End Kids or whatever, and you get all that Leo Gorcey and Hunts Hall kind of references, and that stuff's really a lot of fun. I love the actress who plays Younghee. She is such a doll.
Yeah, she's great. I love with the constant Roger Wilco. I had to look that up. Roger Wilco is one of those phrases that you've just heard in the culture, but I never knew what it meant. And so I finally looked it up. And what it basically means is it's a radio transmission, and you say that upon the receipt of an order, which it's indicating to the person you're talking to that you've received their transmission. And it actually, saying Roger Wilco is actually redundant, because Roger and Wilco basically mean the same thing. You're basically saying, I heard what you told me. So saying Roger Wilco is redundant. You could just say Roger or Wilco. You don't need to say Roger Wilco. But it's just a phrase in the culture. I never really bothered to know what it was. And she says it like 40,000 times in this episode.
Oh, yeah. But anytime people make this reference in other things, people say Roger Wilco all the time,
right?
Despite the redundancy. It just has a cadence to it. Mm-hmm. It just sings, man. And so, yeah.
I feel this episode has, in both things in this episode, it has Spearchucker's worst moment and his best moment. There's a one point where they give Spearchucker a laugh line where when he learns, along with the rest of the guys, that there are moose, that's a thing, and he says, I thought we were here to liberate these people. It must have been a misprint. And it's supposed to be a laugh line, and it just falls flat. Like, it's just, there's something about Timothy Brown's delivery that just squashes the line. It just doesn't make, it just hangs there. Nobody laughs. They didn't even put like a laugh track over it. You're just like, okay, was that supposed to be funny? But then I think it has Spearchucker's best moment when they're waiting for Young Hee's family to show up, and they're trying to teach her to be, as they say, demoosifier. He sits with her, and he grabs her hand and puts her hand up against his face, and they talk about, we're the same. We're all the same. And even though our skin colors are different, we're all the same. And I actually think that's a nice little dramatic moment for a character. And so I actually think that was kind of that Spearchucker's best. Timothy Brown was not great at jokes, but I think that's a nice, sweet little moment that he gets with Young Hee. It's probably his best thing. And he was soon off the show after this.
Right. It could be perceived as heavy-handed, but I think that is a nice moment too. And, you know, for all of the, you know, there's a handful of characters that are in, you know, maybe the first season or the first half of the season, like Ugly John, right, and Ho John, and that just don't last throughout the series. But, Spearchucker is the character from that group that I think could have had more legs as a character. You know, Ho-John is important as kind of like a, at least in this episode, like as a POV for us to understand what's going on culturally with this moose thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ugly John is just like, just takes up space all the time. Like, I'm glad they jettisoned him. I wish they'd done it earlier. But it would have been interesting to see if Spearchucker, you know, had stayed on, what they would have done with him. Because he does have this really nice character moment in this episode.
Yeah, yeah. And they sort of erase him from MASH history. I mean, he's never referred to again. Some of these Ugly John, too, like, they just completely forget. I mean, obviously, in later episodes, they would refer to Henry or Frank or some of the other, but Spearchucker and Ugly John were just forgotten. It was as if they never lived there. You know, Spearchucker never lived in the swamp as far as MASH was concerned in later seasons.
Yeah, and there's something kind of odd here. I mean, I think this is an episode that's kind of an example of why Wayne Rogers left a couple seasons later. Because
mm-hmm.
Trapper has almost nothing to do in this episode.
Yep. Yep.
It's just Hawkeye, you know. And I think the best episodes, or many of them from these early seasons, are when Hawk and Trapper really have a lot of interplay and a lot of joking, and they're working it together.
Right. Hawkeye's the one who plays the cards, and it's Trapper in the background sitting. You're right. I enjoy those better when it's the two of them. Hawkeye and Trapper are equally offended at the idea of a moose, but it's Hawkeye who drives the plot at that point. So, yeah, I can imagine that Wayne Rogers probably saw the writing on the wall pretty early on, you know, that he's constantly being sidelined in favor of Hawkeye. Hawkeye's sort of becoming the moral center of the show. He's the one who's, I mean, he's just as, Trapper's just as offended, but you wouldn't know it from sort of the way Hawkeye takes the reins of this whole plot.
Yeah, I mean, they are seldom in disagreement on moral issues. And yet, screenwriters or directors, like, they lean on Hawkeye, always.
Yep.
And it's a shame that we don't get to see Trap get to take center stage often.
Yeah, and as we'll get to in later episodes, and especially in seasons 2 and 3, the moments where they let Trapper John take the lead, those are really good episodes. There are some really – Wayne Rogers as Trapper has some really great moments. They just didn't give him a lot of moments, unfortunately.
Yeah,
So
and Wayne Rogers was terrific. I mean, mm-hmm. he could do the material. And you know, your Hawkeye is only as strong as your Trapper or your BJ. Mm-hmm. You know, if you don't have those guys, Hawkeye is just kind of he could come across as like a good guy version of Brainy Smurf.
Wow. I did not expect that.
Yeah, I'm still waking up, Rob, so that analogy may not work too well. But any show is only as good as its supporting cast, and you know, the stronger that support, the stronger your lead.
Yeah, that's true.
Noticeably absent from this episode is any there's no Frank or Hot Lips.
No, they make a quick reference to Frank being in Tokyo, which gets him out of the swamp, and which is how they allow. That's where Young He ends up sleeping because she stays there. But it's that's interesting that so early in the show you would get rid of two of the main characters to focus on this plot. I don't know. I know that Loretta Swit had a lot of other like TV projects that I think they had to work around a little later on. There are other episodes where she's entirely absent and that's the reason. So maybe that's what it was. And, or maybe they felt like they had to focus on Hawkeye and Trapper at the beginning or whatever. Cause I mean, it's funny these two big actors are sidelined and yet Young He, you know, this character that will only appear in this one episode is given quite a showcase.
Oh yeah. And Young He is terrific. I mean, like if she wasn't so lovable, this episode wouldn't work.
Right. Yeah. She's really sweet. She's really sweet.
Oh yeah. But I was thinking, because as I was rewatching this last night, I'm like, if Frank and Margaret were in this, we had a little more time for this episode to breathe, you could have this whole other plot of, like, Frank being a jerk mm-hmm. and a racist, you know? It's too bad that we were so rigid with the runtime on television. If it was the Netflix era, this could be like a nice 40-minute episode mm-hmm, mm-hmm. with this whole other plot, and there'd be room for that. But I don't know. I think it could have been stronger. But it's still a memorable episode, and I think a good one.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple other actors I wanted to mention. Nurse Jones, which is the nurse that Hawkeye's making out with out in the minefield. She's played by an actress named Barbara Brownell, who had a bunch of sort of sparing credits here and there. And then later on, in the last couple of years, has really kind of racked up a couple of impressive things. She was on Grey's Anatomy. She was on Mad Men. And she was in Paul Thomas Anderson's The Master, which is like, oh, wow. Yeah, like that's kind of a huge thing. Linda Micheljohn plays Lieutenant Scorch, which is Henry's erstwhile girlfriend in camp. She mostly appeared in the first season. She makes a couple of sparing appearances in the second season, but that's pretty much it for her. And then behind the scenes, we got, as I mentioned, Hi Averback directed this episode. He directed Requiem for a Lightweight, which we already covered. And this episode was written by Lawrence Marks, and he wrote over 20 episodes of MASH. So he was a good go-to guy he clearly had the knack for these characters and stuff like that. So yeah, it's setting up the moral dimensions of Hawkeye and Trapper, especially Hawkeye. I like that it has a nice happy ending. You know, not all MASHs did, but this one does. MASH will return to the concept of the moose in a season 4 episode where we find out one of the characters at the 477 has his own moose. So they will get back to this whole notion later on. So yeah, I think it's a really solid episode, and you're right. It's the performance by Virginia Ann Lee really sells it. She's sweet and full of energy, and I like when, you know, they teach her to be confident, where she says, "I am also beautiful," and they're all happy about that. They're teaching all this stuff. So yeah, it's a really sweet show.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Every scene with Benny, I love the whole, I'm going to get on my knees and punch this kid in the nose, grabbing the cigarettes, I'm going to give this back to you when you're 50. But I love it when they're watching Hawkeye get a shave from Young He, and Spearchucker and Trapper go into the tent, go into the swamp, and it's been cleaned up, everything, and they're disgusted. They're mad about, like, all the dirt, all the laundry's been picked up and whatever. And Trapper says, once she's gone, we're going to get back to dirtying the place back up like normal. And then Hawkeye does this great double take, and he goes, they don't call you the aristocrat of the AMA for nothing. I love that you have to know what the AMA is, like, for that to work. I think that's such a great gag. I love that you know, it was a running gag that the swamp was filthy, always filthy. but this really sold the idea that they actually kind of go out of their way to make it filthy. It's not just because they're lazy. It's that they actively want it filthy. You think some people don't want their house to be filthy. It's just they're just too lazy to clean. And if it gets clean, they're happy. But the Hawkeye and Trapper and Spear Trick are actually upset that the place is cleaned up.
You know, for some reason, there can be comfort found in squalor, and some people do enjoy that. I don't know about that. But one scene that I really like is when Hawkeye first goes to Henry's office about the issue of the moose. And they both agree, you know, how horrible and how reprehensible it is to own a person. I wish I could quote it. I'm sorry. And it's really about, I think it's probably only Henry's only seen in the episode.
Yeah, he's barely in this one. Yeah, when Henry reveals to him, when he says, "Well, Baker's CEO has a moose of his own," and Hawkeye goes, "That's rotten!" Like, he's just stunned, and Henry's just kind of like, "Yeah, what are you gonna do?"
Yeah, I love that Henry is, while he's their boss, they can kind of go to him as a friend and a pal about a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
But he's kind of jaded in a way, like, look, guys, what do you expect me to do? My hands are tied in a lot of situations, and this is one of them. And so then they have to come up with a plan of their own, and that sets the plot in motion. I think Henry facilitates those kinds of stories really well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this Hawkeye, Henry is only in charge because somebody put him in charge. He would rather, he would much rather, I think, be in the swamp with the guys and being one of the guys. And I mentioned in a previous episode that McLean Stevenson actually auditioned to play Hawkeye early on, and then they thought he would be better for Henry because he was like slightly older and a little slightly more authority. But I think Henry would much rather be one of the gang than have to actually run the place. And that was again one of the nice things about later on, many years down the road, when they replaced the commanding officer character, they would go in a completely different direction. And get someone who actively was an authority figure, which was a nice change for the show. But yeah, Henry really doesn't want this job. He's been forced into it, and he just kind of wants to go along and get along as best he can. And that whole scene he has in the tent with Lieutenant Scorch, you could hear he's more interested in canoodling with her than he is in helping Hawkeye and Trapper with their moose problem.
Yeah. You know, and something you mentioned just a couple moments ago, I really appreciate that the show had the guts and to, when it came time to replace characters, to go completely in a different direction.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, Winchester is night and day from Frank.
Right.
And, you know, BJ is the married guy who doesn't cheat on his wife, you know, as opposed to Hawk and Trapper who just like, hey, while us cats are away, you know?
Yeah, right.
And, you know, and again, you know, Colonel Potter being very different than Henry, I appreciate that so much, that the premise of the show works so well that you can play around with a major component and it still works.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned McLean Stevenson auditioning for Hawkeye. They kept the fisherman's hat.
They did, you know, yes, they did.
Movie Hawkeye and Henry, they kept that going. It's a good look. I always appreciated that. I liked that hat.
I always feel like it's Henry's self-acknowledgement that he's not completely a soldier, that he doesn't wear the military cap. He wears something from home, you know. That's not something that a commanding officer would wear, and he doesn't wear his colonel whatever that thing is. I don't even know what that symbol is for the colonel. He doesn't wear that. He wears his fishing cap, and of course they get a lot of mileage out of that with gags where he's always saluting someone and catching it on a fish hook or whatever. That was just a good fodder for joke material. So yeah, the moose. It's a really really good episode, and you mentioned later seasons, and that's a good transition for something I wanted to mention. For those of you who are listening to this episode, you're probably wondering, it came a little early, because initially when I started MASHcast, I said it was going to be once a month. Well, I've gotten enough comments from people and requests that the show have an increased frequency that I've decided that we're going to do the show, I guess I'm going to do the show twice a month now. Instead of once a month, we're going to do it twice a month. Now, that means something has to give because of physics. So we're going to be running Film and Water twice a month now and MASHcast twice a month. It won't always be alternating weeks. There are some dates where I want to run a particular Film and Water to coincide with a certain date on the calendar. So there might be some weeks where I do two MASHcasts in a row and then two Film and Waters. But for the most part, from this point on, I'm going to split the month between two Film and Waters and two MASHcasts, which is why this episode is only showing up 2 weeks after the last one. So for those of you that were asking me to increase the frequency of MASHcast, you're getting your wish. And this way we're going to be able to get to later seasons in something less than 10 years from now. So that's the goal, is to be able to get through the show a little bit faster. So I guess that's really going to do it for the Moose. Nicholas, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Rob, it's always a pleasure. I always enjoy doing shows with you, so thank you.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Well, let's see. You can find me on Twitter, at Comic Reflection, on Instagram, at Promcakes. If you want to check out my podcasts, Comic Reflections is on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher Radio. And I'm not doing many episodes of Comic Reflections too much these days, but I have my other show, The Marvel Saga, which is ongoing, and it's roughly a monthly. Still have that coming out. So if you are interested in old comic books, please do check those out, folks.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, I have to end every episode, as I always do, by mentioning that you can find back episodes of our show on our website, fireandwaterpodcast.com. We always talk MASH over on Twitter, which is at MASH477cast. And as I do every episode, I have to ask the call for streaming. Please, Disney or Fox, whoever owns MASH at this point, please get this show on streaming. You're going to increase the value of MASH if you get people, have it available on iTunes somewhere. Even though I own the Martinis and Medicine box set, I would buy the entire run of MASH on iTunes if it was available, because it would be so much fun to be able to have those just a click away. So whoever owns MASH, please get it on streaming. And I'm going to ask that every single episode until it happens, and probably even a couple after that. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back, like I said, in just 2 weeks with another episode. And so until then, that is all.
Come back to Seoul, and we'll get $1,000, maybe $1,500 bucks for you easy.
Hold it. You can't let yourself be sold again.
Well, you guys are brushing her off. What do you care?
I may get on my knees and punch this kid in the nose.